in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Roger Sherman, Stephen Godfrey, welcome to Phantom Island, presented by Homefield. We have not had the three of us on the microphone at the same time before. It's time, you know, we're
ever?
Not on this. I don't know if we've ever done it on an issue.
It's dangerous.
It is dangerous. Ooh. Yes.
We all have individual beefs with each other that and very unappealing personalities, and we'll
Bravo.
See what happens.
It's wow. a yeah, Bravo and, reality and show reunion.
Joining us is Andy Cohen.
Yeah.
I have asked you both here today so that we can talk about a thing that really rankled everybody for the first half of December or so, I would say. And that is the G5 spot in the college football playoff. To sort of like set the table here for people who have no idea what we're talking about, or maybe we're barely paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
James Madison and Tulane both made the playoff. Tulane was the 11th seed. JMU was the 12th seed. This created, in combination, I think, with Notre Dame not making the playoff, most prominently, you can throw Texas A&M and Vandy in there probably. You can probably throw BYU in there as well. This created this sort of like surge of backlash from a lot of national media members, but not just media members, who were sort of like, all right, enough of this shit. Enough of this, everybody gets a trophy. Enough of this, like, kowtowing to the babies who also technically play college football. This sucks and we hate it. They don't belong here. It's mm-hmm. a waste of time. Like, I'm being a little extreme, but I'm also, if you go look
not
and say,
really.
Like, what did Joel Klatt have to say about, I'm not that far off, right?
No, I have to participate at least a little bit in very, like, mainstream college football media. And I would say it was like 90-10, not like pro or con on the G5, but it was like 90-10 outraged to like, and maybe the 10% was just sort of like a little bit measured of saying like, these games won't be great. Most people in a pundit position were pretty mad.
Right.
And it's not to me just the tenor of the, how mad people were. Like, it's not just that factor. It's like the only instance I can really think of in any sport that I've covered where people were so mad at the underdog or like existing.
Yeah, definitely.
Normally you don't get mad at the little guy just for being there. That's like celebrated, like, oh, look at how broad this sport is. Look at all the different places it covered. We know that they're not going to ultimately compete for the championship, but we're happy that they're here.
Right.
And in this specific instance, it was the exact opposite. There was just a huge wave of these people don't belong.
Right.
Yeah. By the time the actual games in question started, like the last 24 hours, I made this joke a couple times in a couple different places. It was as if JMU had like stormed the gates or like seized control of something. Like they had enough agency in any world to like make this happen. To Roger's point, there was never a moment where someone was like, you know, the system screwed up and this is what happened. Everyone was blaming these like comparatively poor tiny schools that just wanted to play a football game. Like they had somehow invaded our space.
Yeah. As if they created the system.
Yeah. As if in those offseason meetings, they aren't looked at and immediately laughed out of the room. Like they don't have the power to do this. They never had the power to do this.
They knew. They built this so that they could hack their way in thanks to Five Lost Duke. They knew what this would happen down the line.
This is the ultimate, the Sun Belt's Trojan horse.
The counter argument, I would say, which I will admit I'm more sympathetic to, but we're not going to replicate today, go something like, hey, shut up. The G5 deserves to be here. They play football just like everybody else. It's if FBS is all one sport, like we have to give everybody a seat at the table. I will say my issue with this argument, which is I would say primarily emotions based, is that it doesn't really address the complaints people have. Like, cool, I can get on board with Tulane deserves to be in the college football playoff. JMU does as well. that in and of itself does not address, like, these games were, spoiler, we're recording this after Tulane lost.
Yeah, well after. Again. Yeah, yeah.
And JMU went to Eugene and lost as well. I think, like, if we wanted to, we could make the case of, like, these games were closer than they appear in the box score. But I could not sit here and make the case to you that be like, these were entertaining, compelling, close matchups. I couldn't, like,
I got so hopeful on JMU's first offensive drive when the quarterback, whose name escapes me suddenly, it was like a little bit of a toss play, and then he rolled out like Permian High School in 1989, and he was the lead blocker on a pitch, and it worked. It like picked up a first down. I was like, here we go. And so it was like a solid six real minutes of hope before inevitability.
Tulane drove down the field in their first drive.
Yeah, they looked good. Yeah. But their first 15 were good.
Yeah.
We got to the first media timeout of the NCAA tournament, and the 16 seed was up 8-3.
That's right.
Three steals. Wow.
It's going to happen.
And I like come from a long history of saying that these teams belong and deserve a seat at the table. And for a time there, you know, writing about the UCF teams and the Cincinnati teams of, I'd say, like 27 to 2021, it really did feel like there were statistical arguments. These teams have been outperforming in the BCS bowl games they've been allowed to participate in. They've been beating Power Five conference teams during the regular season. And so, like, I get to this year and I'm like, yeah, let these teams in. They're pretty good. You've continually underestimated these conferences for decades, but it doesn't seem like that's the case anymore. It's increasingly hard for me to make the argument that there's an on-field reason for these teams to be included. So I want to hit that counterpoint hard that we need these teams here. They've been unfairly excluded, but I'm going to come along for the ride and try to talk through what actually needs to happen.
A lot has changed. I think it was the year before Cincinnati made the playoff four, Roger, that they played
Georgia in the
Peach, Bowl, I think.
Yeah.
And if I recall, that was a very close game. It was like a handful of possessions.
Game went down to the fourth quarter and ended up being
and you're talking
game.
You're talking about like a Cincinnati team that put like Sauce Gardner, you know, I say Desmond Ridder not as a joke because he was a third round draft pick, but like Sauce Gardner and Desmond Ridder probably aren't there for their last two seasons at Cincinnati anymore. I know Cincinnati's in the Big 12 and it depends on NIL, but before we go any further, I want to table set by acknowledging, because I guess Bud hit the hipster thing like square on the bullseye as college football hipsters. A lot has changed, and just yesterday, I was told that a Sunbelt school was really, really excited that they were upping their, they think they can up their NIL this coming season to 2 million. And that was really funny to me because I was also having conversations with Big Ten schools yesterday about like the tens of millions that they're going to pay the roster. So unfortunately, and hopefully we can figure something out today on this lovely podcast, it increasingly does feel like two different sports.
Yes. And I wanted to once again talk about it because it excites me. Cincinnati was beating Georgia.
Yeah, that's right.
They lost on the last second field goal, and that they Sauce Gardner was injured for that game. And then Georgia was like a year away from becoming
Georgia.
The Stetson Bennett killing machine. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So I will say, I think I'll go ahead and speak for all three of us. I think all of us, if you had to put us in the, should the G5 be in the playoff or not argument, I think without hesitation, we would say yes. The G5 deserves representation in a playoff as big as this one is, frankly.
Yes.
So let's just say that's where we're starting from. We're not going to argue. I'm not going to like do the like, well, I'll argue the other side of this. That's not what we're trying to do. Mm-mm. Before we get into sort of like taking the arguments or the complaints people have about how the G5 is working with the 12-team playoff and eventually the 14, 16, 18, 32, whatever team playoff, Roger, you brought up in our prep for this show that we should explain, like, why the G5 is here at all. And we should sort of, like, make clear that this is not some act of incredible college football charity that we are
Inclusion. It's inclusion.
Yeah, table setting, just college football. There are some big conferences and some small conferences. And basically every change in the sport in the last, probably since I was born and maybe before, has been the big conferences squeezing out the small conferences in some way. They're poaching the best teams from those conferences in realignment. They are forming organizations like the BCS that specifically include or have spots for the champions of the power leagues and do not have spots for everybody else. And then you get the college football playoff, where it took 9 or 10 years or 8 years for a team from outside of the power conferences to get a spot and play their way in. There was no way for them to do so, and it seemed like they were kind of being a little bit discriminated against. And then we expand to 12 teams, and all of a sudden, for the first time, they do include this one spot that is guaranteed for the best winner of the five power for the best winner of the five non-power conferences. The group of five conferences was automatically going to be included. And I remember thinking, like, why did they do that? There's no, like, it seems to be like so many times they have excluded. Why in this case did they choose to put that spot there? And I mean, the long of the short of it is there's a little bit of a fear of some sort of antitrust lawsuit or something coming from the smaller leagues, which is basically would be saying that the power conferences were colluding together to exclude the smaller leagues from fair competition. Like, you're allowed to have a system where some of these teams are just better than the other teams, but if you're specifically excluding them, that's something that could come up in court. It could be bad. It could lose you some money. So eventually they decide to have this one spot for everybody else. And that is sort of the thing which people have seized upon as like, you really shouldn't be including these teams. They're not good enough to participate. But the reason they've been included, it seems, is not so much competitive as legal.
Yeah. There's also sort of an interesting future wrinkle here with the rebirth of the reorganized Pac-12. I think will be a little bit interesting to see, because that will count. It hasn't previously, because the two-team conference can't get this spot. But it will be kind of interesting to see sort of like, all right, that Pac-12, is it like maybe exists at the top of the group of five, maybe just below the P4? I don't know. Like, I think there's an interesting sort of,
we
like,
keep saying wrinkle. G5.
Yeah.
Which stands for group of five, which is like one of the worst acronyms or shortenings I've ever heard. Like the group of five conferences would actively not like it if we thought about them that way. But it's like we've got this group and there's five in them.
Yeah.
But yeah, really it is six, because the Pac-12 will be one of them. And it actually mirrors what happened about 15 years ago, where the Big East was considered one of the automatic qualifier conferences of the BCS. And when that league dissolved, when so many of the better teams were taken over into the larger leagues, were subsumed into it, the Big East, they weren't sure how to legally like expel them at first. There was one year where the winner of the American Athletic Conference, which was the successor to the Big East, got an automatic slot anyway. But yeah, they'll push you out. The power conferences will cannibalize you and push you out.
Yeah.
Group of five, which makes it seem weirder that they let the group of five teams in, and now there's a backlash to that.
Group of five, also a bad name, because group of eight is the other term it makes me think of. And group of eight is a term that is all about, like, here are the most powerful industrialized nations on Earth. And the group of five, like, they couldn't be more different in terms of relative influence.
There are a lot of commuter schools. It's a great place to finish an education degree at night.
It's just other. It's just other.
More or less. Yes.
Yeah. Pretty much. And and they will all it will always exist in some way. Because there's so much inertia in what passes for a ruling body, or like the just that, like what we would call the powers that be. Like if you talked about the powers that be in the NFL, you have like a commissioner and a league office, but because college football's governance is either non-existent or like really diffuse, you're never going to have a cutoff where it's like, all right, these things are separate now. Like these schools that have hundreds, like $100 million budgets and higher, they're going to be over here, and then you guys are going to be over here. It's always going to be like the English soccer system, but without the actual official promotion and relegation. And so this argument has been around as long as I can remember and will like kind of always be, even if like they keep annexing schools who can like make enough money. So like, you know, Roger mentioned earlier a bunch of schools that are now considered power schools. Cincinnati, I think you said, Central Florida, you know, Houston. For a while it was TCU, and these were all schools that's like in the case of those Texas schools especially that had like a lot of big time college football history, but they got left out in a round of realignment. You know, I guarantee you in 3 or 4 years, like from what I know about the financial maneuverings in like South Florida, they're going to be pushing against the bottom of the power league. So you're always going to have someone knocking on the door, and you're always going to have someone trying to make a case for inclusion.
Yeah. Problem number one here, like just like the overarching problem is that every entity is like clawing against each other and trying to fight their way up. Yeah. We talk about the greatest successes in the group of five, quote unquote, history, and they're all from schools that then were like, you know, we just went down the list, were A, recruited by conferences trying to increase their own power, trying to bring in the best schools to their conference, but also they were happy to leave the group of five. They have no loyalty to making the group of five better. Yeah. They just wanted to get out.
Yeah.
When everyone, it makes it hard to create any sort of lasting push for inclusion, lasting push for betterment from these leagues, which even to their own members are seen as temporary stopovers.
Yeah.
On a quest to come up.
And Roger, I would say the overwhelming majority of what we call group of five schools right now are on their second or third or fourth conference at the FBS level. So there's not a lot of, there's a core of schools in the MAC that have always been in the MAC as long as they've been in the FBS. But when you start talking about the Sun Belt, Conference USA, Mountain West, when you talk about the old WAC, all of these schools are transient in nature.
It's like I'm talking about how I was out here arguing for Cincinnati and UCF and their fans. Certainly the UCF fans were going hard. Like, you are leaving us out. You are excluding us. We are outside of the system. The Cincinnati fans hopped on board. And I'm still here yelling about the group of five teams being left out. And they're like, not our problem anymore.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah.
That's former MAC school, UCF, just to be clear.
They're like, the moment doesn't bother us at all.
No, moment you claw up the ladder, you are trying to kick the rungs out from underneath you. Like, yeah, I don't think anybody at Houston cares at all about the plight of, I don't know, Texas State. Yeah, North Texas. No. And there is no kumbaya world where they're like, yeah, bring all those other Texas schools up to our level. That never happens.
So we are trying to solve a problem for an entity that barely seems to exist and does not necessarily, a lot of the people will not want to solve the problem. It's just, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
A lot of the symptoms of the G5 in the playoff are just a simple reflection of the inequality that is built into college football. Simple as that.
One more funny thing, Ryan, all the leadership, again, because I just like, I'm always preoccupied by the lack of like any kind of central governance. Mm-hmm. If you have like a dynamic leader, the way like UCF did, Rogers mentioned UCF because if you worked in sports internet for like that 10 to 15 year period, UCF fans were either like harassing you or championing you. They were very active.
Sometimes both.
But all like the leadership, you know, the biggest problem here is that like if you have a really good AD at one of these schools and they're going to like say the right things and they're going to get out there and they're going to champion the G5 and they're going to raise a bunch of money for their school and then they're going to take the first power AD job they can and they get out. So no one ever even stays to like fight the good fight.
Right.
Just me and you,
Steven. That's right. That's right. I'm not going anywhere. I'm wearing a Delaware quarter zip right now.
The last two men on the wall. All right.
Yeah.
Before we get into the specifics of what's agitating people about the playoff and the group of five. We're going to hear very briefly from our friends at Homefield Apparel. Today's episode of Phantom Island is brought to you thanks to the excellent folks at Homefield. And given that we're talking G5 today, we're going to talk about the greatness of the gear you can buy for various G5 schools at Homefield. What makes so many of these choices awesome is how custom they are for each program. For a few examples, Colorado State gets their old CAC, Colorado Agricultural College, stylized letter logo from the 19th century on a t-shirt, a crew neck, and a hoodie. Toledo has one t-shirt with a rocket that looks like it's from a PBS show about science for kids, and an entirely different long sleeve where the rocket looks like it's from a 1970s thriller movie about somebody trying to blow up the moon. Fresno State has items with a bulldog playing basketball, a bulldog wearing a sailor hat, and a bulldog wearing board shorts. For some reason, that is not entirely clear to me. The point is, Homefield takes the time to build beautiful and thoughtful selections for every school they carry, and the G5 is well represented here. So go check them out at homefieldapparel.com. And if you figure out why that dog has a bathing suit on, please let me know. I already know this is going to bother me. Okay, back to the show. Okay, argument one. I have three arguments here for what people don't like about the current G5 inclusion in college football playoff. I'm going to start with the, I think, the largest and loudest argument. The games are lopsided. And so far, yes, that is true.
Yeah,
I think if you look at both the games this year, if you look at Boise State, they got the bye, but then played Penn State.
Yeah, they got beat on.
Yeah. Not especially competitive. I do want to point out, the way we have the playoff structured now, and Boise is kind of an exception to it, but an exception that's not going to be repeated because we immediately did away with the whole conference champions get the buys thing. I think in part because we were like, Arizona State and Boise State? Uh-uh. Don't think these guys get them.
Yeah, a lot of big feelings there. Yeah. A lot of people very angry.
Yes.
And oh, yeah. And what's funny this year is that now that it's all power teams getting the bye,
yeah,
they're angry because they didn't get home games. So there's also no satisfying.
There's all, oh, I mean, and this is like very briefly, this is the thing we should have learned from the BCS. It's like you can tweak it every year. You're still going to be mad at something.
You're
chasing anger no matter what.
The tweaking will continue.
But the way this is set up in the 12-team playoff, these are always going to be the equivalent of 1 versus 16, maybe 2 versus 15 teams, games rather, in March Madness, in the men's and women's tournament. In that, you're always, like, Tulane and JMU are never going to get ranked so high that they get, like, a superior matchup. Number 12 JMU plays number 5 Oregon. Number 11 Tulane plays number 6 Ole Miss.
Right.
Boise State got the bye, but do you know what they were ranked in the playoff that year? And when it was just like, here's the top 25
in the committee rankings.
Yeah.
Explaining the seating that year was its own cottage industry.
They
like,
were not. They were 15 not.
15 minutes of every podcast.
Yes.
They were ninth.
They were the ninth seed.
But they were
sorry. They were
but
ninth
they
ranked.
They
were ninth, the, but they were the fourth seed. That's the right way to put it. Yes. So
one thing I want to point out before we go any further.
Yeah.
I feel very confident in saying this. What happened this year was such a fluke, and it involved a sort of like a Halley's Comet type event in a power conference in the ACC. Just if for some reason you have wandered into the podcast and you are not a hardcore college football fan, the ACC did away with divisions when they added more teams in the last round of realignment. They didn't really pay a ton of mind to how they would select their championship game teams, and they encountered in this first incarnation a logjam of tied teams. The problem was their overall records were bad. I'm going to do this quickly. And rather than create a sort of like kill switch or a fail safe the way the Mountain West ironically did, where the best team in outside rankings is automatically elevated, which would have been Miami, who made the playoff anyway, they ended up with a Duke-Virginia game that Duke won. And because Duke had 5 losses overall, they could not make the playoff field from the selection committee. And because there was a clause or a caveat that X amount of conference champions had to make the field of 12, we only had three conference champions from the power leagues, and then we had to fill two slots. So it became Tulane and James Madison. They were never ranked. Tulane ended up ranked the last 2 weeks. But as the season went along, this was never a concern. This was an incredibly unique event. So as we move forward, I think it might be best to talk about the idea of just one team.
Sure.
Because I feel confident in saying, like, this isn't going to happen again because of the G5's greed. It's just never going to happen again because of the weird circumstances involving the ACC specifically.
So there was the rule heading into this year. We could just do a whole thing about how it tweaks every year, and every year it's slightly different, and every year it's even more complicated. And
then
you have to explain. And you're 27 minutes into the podcast, and you still haven't explained these specifics.
The rule
in the first 2 years was that the five highest ranked conference champions got in, and it did not specify what conferences they were from, which allowed this possibility for two. And I think that also ties back to what I was saying earlier. They didn't want to put specific conference titles on it, A, because they didn't think this would come up often, and B, because there is that fear of if you carve them out, you open yourself up for a lawsuit.
Yeah.
If you specifically do that. However, it seems there is a memorandum of understanding that was signed that moving forward, they will just go with the four power conference champions, and that won't be possible for there to be two anymore.
Back to the lopsided argument. If you look back at the 24-25 college football playoff, the 5-12 game in that configuration was Texas beating Clemson 38-24. Now you look at that and you're like, oh my God, two touchdown game, two big brands, probably pretty good. And you know what? If you want to make that argument, that's fine. I will tell you that it was 31-10. With about 20 minutes left to go in favor of Texas, that there is a view. You could view this game, if you want, as like Texas always had this in hand. Clemson made a good late push with Cade Klubnik hitting some deep balls to get the game close. But other than like Clemson doing that thing we talked about where it's like, oh my God, Clemson scored on their first drive. Maybe they're going to win this game. Largely, I would not say was a fine game to watch, and was probably one of the better first round games to watch, but was not like, ooh, what a juicy matchup this was. The 6-11 was Penn State SMU. That was like, I could make the argument that that was maybe the, well, Ohio State Tennessee really stands out here as well. Like, I guess the larger point is that, like, A, as Rogers put in the document here, we don't get a lot of, we should be very used to games not being competitive, and there is no seeming way to just, like, engineer that. But I think my point, and we're going to get to Rogers next, is that if you're going to give the G5 team, and we'll say, like Godfrey said, we'll say it's just the one seed, if they're going to be the 12 every year, they're going to play the 5 every year. And almost every year, the 5 is going to be a monster team. The 5 last year won the national champion. No, the 5 didn't win the national championship last year, sorry. But the 5 probably played the most competitive game against the eventual national champions. That would be Texas last year.
Yeah.
And this year, the 5 is Oregon, who I think lots of people think, like, yeah, sure, incredibly terrifying team. So I guess my point is, if we're going to say these are not competitive games, we should at least acknowledge that some of that is, unlike in men's and women's basketball, where we will give what we call mid-majors there. Like, a mid-major can get a 4 seed, a 5 seed, sometimes a 2 or a 1 seed. Like, you can see them get the advantage of, oh, you're going to have an easier path. If we always give, at least statistically, the G5 team the hardest path, they will always, like, yes, most of these games are going to be blowouts, and we should at least acknowledge that the seeding is part of that. But Roger, I think your point is probably the better one.
The 5-12 game this year was not that different from the 5-12 game last year. Last year, Texas took a big lead and Clemson scored some touchdowns to make it a 14-point game.
Yep.
This year, Oregon took a big lead and James Madison scored some touchdowns to make it a 17-point game.
Yeah. Right.
Structurally the same.
Right.
In the history of the college football playoff, we now have played 45 games. The average margin of victory across the 45 games is 17.5 points. I think it was a little bit more lopsided if I just looked at the semifinals from the first few years of the tournament. Every year was 31-0, 38-0.
Yeah.
Of course, the thing that really pops the average up a few points was the 65-7 national championship game. Really,
yeah,
but really pushed the average from 16 to 17 there. So there's no configuration you can put, even if you do include just the best teams from the best conferences, you will still get games that are lopsided.
Clemson shut Ohio State out in a college football playoff game.
Dude, I was there for SB Nation and was walking around the Cardinal Stadium with like 2 minutes into the second half, trying to like cobble together something interesting to like write about, because it was such a blowout. It was worse. That game was worse to watch, or like less competitive than any G5 participating anything. The other one that springs to mind, I remember watching from a hotel in LA, was that Michigan State Alabama semi. Yeah, I think Roger mentioned that might be the least competitive I've ever seen. There's no way to guard against that. Also, like, I mean, we could sit here and remember some games for the next 20 minutes, but there's no way that, like, this is where I would get, we can have a conversation on these type of programs, but when I'm doing like the 5 minute radio hit, it turns into like an argument. Nobody cares that those games are bad because there's helmets you recognize. Like, nobody cared at all. Nobody cared like that LSU like evaporated Oklahoma in route to beating the crap out of Clemson, because like there's this idea that that's just supposed to happen. So my problem with blowouts is that, one, if that's just part of football, it's going to occur. It occurs at the highest level. It also occurs at the highest level between teams. The national championship in the last 20, 30 years, one of the most famous things that happened was that an LSU team that was number one in the country couldn't cross the 50. So like, that's not something that we could sit here and suggest a system to avoid. That's never going to stop. It only seems to piss people off, though, when they don't recognize one of the helmets. That's the part that really frustrates me.
It feels disingenuous because you weren't complaining about this. You wouldn't complain about the same scoreline if you swapped out the team.
No.
I mean, there's no, you say this is a part of football. This is a part of sports.
Yeah.
There's no championship structure where every game is close.
I think the best proof of that actually is the Super Bowl. Everybody listening to this is very fortunate, I would say, to live in, over the last, let's say, 20 years, really from like,
oh,
Tom
I know
Brady
where you're going with this. Yeah.
Super Bowl on.
Yeah.
We have watched a ton of competitive Super Bowls that go to overtime, Super Bowls that are close in the fourth quarter. Like, but I can tell you, Steven and I can both tell you, because we are old enough, that like from the mid 80s to the mid 90s or
they
so,
they all sucked.
You got, I would say, three lopsided Super Bowls for every one close one.
By the halftime show became a big deal, right?
It did, right. Yes. That's and so did the commercials, Roger, and so did the post-game television programming of like, oh, there's a new X-Files or whatever. Like, I remember being 14 or 13 years old and organizing my Magic cards for the second half of Chargers-Niners, because that game was a snuff film. It was terrible.
That's the game that taught me to never bet on sports. I lost $5 betting on the Chargers with my dad in that game.
Why? Who taught you into the Chargers?
My dad did. He gave me 21 points, and I said, how could a team possibly not cover 21 points?
That is predatory lending.
This is an episode idea for another time, but I don't know how the NFC didn't just split apart from the AFC.
For a stretch there, yeah.
Dude, Raj, back when...
I did not know that that happened. That was slightly before my time. When I saw that on like Wikipedia, I was like, what?
Yeah.
The NFC won 15 in a row? 13?
Yep. Roger, every year Sports Illustrated would create a cover. And it's like, I was like 12, 11 is when I start remembering this. And they would just call it the big ticket game. And it's like the real Super Bowl. They would put it on the cover. And it was usually like Cowboys, Niners. Sometimes the Giants would be involved, whatever. But like, the NFC Championship was such a better football game. It became kind of a joke. That's where Summerall and Madden became famous.
Yeah.
Anyway, but we digress.
But we're right now talking about the championship game of the NFL, the most popular league on earth. Right now, the thing that people are getting upset about with the G5 spot is one of the four first round games. You know, we're like, I feel like you can afford a lopsided result there. And again, like we said, if the 5 was playing the 12, it would still be a lopsided result.
Roger, you're like, you know more about basketball. Well, everyone knows more about basketball than me, but like, it doesn't it get it lost in the shuffle on like that great Thursday when the tournament starts? As many games as we all sort of rush to on social and get really excited about, like, oh, Bucknell's beating Kansas or like whatever. There's also like a one-seeded, you know, Michigan State or Arizona that's just trouncing like a team by 30. Like that happens with regularity in the basketball tournament. We don't seem to care.
There are four of them every year. I mean, like, and then we tolerated 20 plus years of the 16 seed losing every game.
Yeah.
Because eventually
before
that UMBC.
Yeah, Baltimore County. Yeah.
And it seemed like that was an acceptable price to pay. And like you said, it gets lost in the shuffle. It's a little bit harder in college football because, like, in the first round of the NCAA tournament, you have 16 matchups between top four seeds and auto qualifiers every year. If one of them hits, we rally around that team. We celebrate them.
And most of them are happening. Like, a lot of them are happening at the same time. I think we would care less about, oh my God, Tulane is turning the ball over and they've already lost this Ole Miss team. If there were three other college football games on and we could just be like, I'm not watching that one. I'm going to go watch.
I'll bounce to the other one. Yeah.
And it also, we're talking about one game a year. So if we get one out of 16, like it could take a while, you know, and they'd still be hitting at the same rate as the NCAA tournament. But we get this one game a year, and it feels to me like if we get 4 years of blowouts, which would be kind of like I'd expect that, they might just say we're done with this and we're not going to allow it anymore, even though it's not that unlikely that happens.
I'll pose this. I don't believe in it. I think everyone knows where I stand on all this. Again, Delaware quarters up. There's a belief that's been backed up by about 3 years of data. That's not a lot of data. The high end, the helmet side of this equation is a sort of saming together or topping out. And there's a kind of leveling. So where you won't have a 2019 LSU for a little while. And there is some evidence in this from coaches I've spoken with talking about not so much the scoring differential, but like the individual, when you're looking at talent composite sheets and that kind of thing. Like Ohio State was the best team in the tournament last year, but was not in the margins so ridiculously better than the Notre Dame team or the Texas team that they beat. So there's a push from like our dear friend Bud and his ilk, where it's like, we want to see more of those teams in, because there's an unpredictability and there's an NFL playoff component to that. And that's kind of, I think we're probably stepping into another side of the argument, which is one that I do like genuinely, I guess, empathize with, is that we ran the numbers on the Yahoo show, the Notre Dame through Parker Fleming's stats, his like his advanced metric system where you can plug in neutral site lines. Like Notre Dame was favored against 10 or nine, they were significantly favored by, like, actually favored against 9. They were a pick 'em against one team. I can't remember which one. I want to say it was Georgia. And they were only underdogs in 2 games. And that does feel bad, but I don't know if, like, it's like that Eric Andre meme. I'm not really sure why we're shooting James Madison because we fucked up Notre Dame.
All right. I'm going to move us to argument 2, which you have sort of led us to, Godfrey. The thing people don't like about the G5 spots is that we're taking away spots from deserving Power 4 teams. For our purposes, we are going to include Notre Dame in this. An argument that did not ring very true last year, for what it's worth. I don't think anybody was particularly mad that Boise State was in instead of 3-loss SEC team here.
I mean, if you ask Bama fans, they were incensed. I just think that argument lost its teeth because they went into like the Citrus Bowl or whatever it was and absolutely looked terrible. against a Michigan team without a quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, South Carolina maybe could have made an argument, but it didn't feel as egregious as this
and
year.
And then they lost to Illinois as well.
Yeah,
so,
exactly, yeah.
Certainly weren't nationally compelling. Like, yeah, Bama fans were mad, sure. What? It's a day ending and why. That's not the same thing, I think, as, like, college football fans as a whole, or even the media as a whole, is like an injustice has been wrought here. This is where I will give a nod to a little bit of the history and a little bit of like what's happened here. And Roger, you sort of alluded to it. What led us to this point where we sort of said, not just legally, but sort of from a competitive and from a maybe fairness standpoint, that we need to have G5 representation, are the Boise States and Utah's and UCF's and Cincinnati's and so forth that had these great seasons and under the BCS or the 4-team playoff did not have a shot, were relegated to Fiesta Bowls or Peach Bowls, or, you know, like had to sort of take a consolation prize instead of being able to sort of prove what they could do in the playoff as it existed at that point. The teams we talked about so far, last year's Boise State, this year's JMU and Tulane, they don't fit the pattern that we're talking about when we look at those teams. They all have at least one loss, and I think more crucially, they have not beaten the Power Four teams that they played in the regular season. Boise State last year lost to Oregon in the regular season, played them very close, and I think close enough that we could sort of say, like, that's almost as good as a win. But we already mentioned Tulane already lost to Ole Miss. JMU lost to Louisville this year. And looking back at like the teams that did this, 2009 Boise State went undefeated and beat Oregon. The 2006 Boise State team beat a 10-win Oregon State team and also went undefeated. In 2008, undefeated Utah beat a good Oregon State team and a bad Michigan team, but they beat a Michigan team all the same, which should count for something. And in 2004, the Utes beat A&M, Arizona, and UNC. I will note, all of those teams stunk that year, but they at least had the chance to say, hey, here are three teams from power conferences. We beat them all. We beat undefeated. 2017, the UCF team that we've talked about a few times, they beat Maryland. They were supposed to play Georgia Tech. That game got canceled by a hurricane, I believe. Maryland wasn't good that year, but they beat them all the same. And the 2021 Cincinnati team that did make the playoff after going undefeated in 2020, they beat Notre Dame. So that was kind of the thing.
Out for Notre Dame in 2020.
That's
which
right.
That was pretty bad.
And I believe Indiana, which will look weird in history because it was a shitty Indiana team.
So but I like, guess my...
Yeah, the teams, when you say the first argument against these G5 teams getting in is that the games are lopsided, I'd say, hey, the games are going to be lopsided anyway.
Yes.
If you're saying... But I don't think I can stand here and say that this James Madison or this Tulane team deserved a spot based on their performance in the year compared to number 12, number 13. You know, the numbers just are not there anymore.
I don't think they were as strong as some of these other cases, certainly. Like, I do think you can sort of look at them and say, like, well, okay, along these metrics, like, is JMU or Tulane that different from Oklahoma? Maybe not. You know, I think there are some cases where you can sort of say that it's not, the delta is not as large as some people might want to make it out to be. But part of, I think, why we also have the G5 spot, or at least why I sort of think the G5 spot is important, is we watch so many years of these conferences have no guaranteed path. And I think part of what we're experiencing right now is like, look, if you didn't like that for 30 years, 20 years, however you want to frame it, that a G5 team could go undefeated, maybe beat a power team or two on the way, and still be told, like, fuck off to some, like, second, to some sort of, like, B-plus bowl with you. This feels like the thing you have to do to sort of say, we will make sure that that doesn't happen. This is a system that, for its faults, does make sure that if there is that Boise State, or if JMU sort of like, if JMU had like a wild season where they had beat two ACC teams and, you know, gone undefeated, there wouldn't be a question of like, well, should they be in or out? Will they get in or out? I think this is like a fair trade to make for like, we did it 20 years the other way where there was no path. And now we're sort of like, are we maybe overdoing it? Or are we maybe extending more grace than we would in a vacuum? Yes, but it's not in a vacuum. And I do think that's important.
And there's more opportunity in the old days, I think, because of the way that conference schedules are shaking up. Some of those resumes that you just read off, I don't even think they'd be possible in the next couple of years for G5 teams.
I'm going to say something, a really horrifying set of words. I think we can learn something from the BCS format here. Terrifying.
Okay.
The BCS initially did not include any pathway for teams from outside the automatic conferences.
Correct.
But in 2006, they put in a rule that if one of the non-AQ teams wins their conference and is ranked in the top 12, they would automatically get into one of the bowls, or if they were ranked in the top 16 and higher than at least one AQ conference champion. So if like the thing we're talking about is deserving, that sort of adds that element of like when teams are actually good enough to qualify on their own merits, we can't exclude them. If there was like, there could be maybe a provision, like if there's a G5 team, like in the top 20 of the college football playoff rankings, like they automatically get in, but we don't have to let in teams that truly are like not even on the board.
Yeah. Again, this is also the danger, I think, from mostly the BCS, to some extent, the college football playoff, is we have this interesting tendency as fans, as media members, whatever, to sort of like just react to what just happened and treat that as this is the danger. This is like the flaw that will pop up every year.
And, that's why, Ryan, that's why I'm being redundant about mentioning what just happened.
Right. With the
ACC. And like once I got over enjoying the mirth of what happened, I was like, oh God, we're going to overcorrect for something that just is not mathematically possible again. Or if it is, it's just astronomically, you know, low stakes. And what you're describing is 30 years of football every year, like the BCS adjustments. This is why, again, it's crazy how relevant this book still is. In Death to the BCS, one of the chapters outlines what happened and then like the fundamental rejiggering of the formula for the next year, and then another weird thing would happen and they'd be like, oh shit, like, and it wasn't tweaking, you know, if you're talking about an F1 car, it wasn't like we were tweaking a little bit, it was like we got to rebuild the engine every freaking year.
Right. So this is the one complaint that the other sort of thing that looms in the background of this complaint is that the playoff's going to expand, like it just is. By how many teams and when, you know, remains to be seen. But at some point, I do think, I have to believe, maybe naively, that we will stop saying, like, why is the G5 in a 16-team playoff when Team 17? Like, I just don't need us to live in a world where we are marching in the streets about how unjust it is that 3-loss big helmet team got left out for the highest ranked G5 team.
Are we all in agreement? Like, it was fun to like troll Kirk Herbstreit when Cincinnati finally made it in, and he like kind of got snitty and threw a fit about it. That was a 4-team format.
Yeah.
So like UCF's omission can be argued fairly convincingly, but my belief, and I don't know if you guys agree with me, is that if you have 12. I don't think it hurts the product at all to reserve one spot for one school that rises above, what, 60-odd others to be a participant. No. If this thing gets any bigger, then just keep the one, and I don't even think people like us will argue. Like, in other words, so right now the two likeliest outcomes, not the two biggest arguments, because that Big Ten 32 thing has, like, real support behind it, which is insane to say out loud. The likeliest short-term outcomes are an expansion to 14 or 16, as in like as soon as next year. And if you went to 14 or 16, we don't have to use the last 2 years of data to like figure out what game would have been, whatever. But I would still be fine if it was just one G5 team plugged in there somewhere. Like I don't know about y'all, but like that would be fine for me.
And it becomes increasingly hard to get upset about it when it's just taking away one the more spots there are, it becomes increasingly hard to feign being upset about the one.
Yeah. And I think Notre Dame this year, it just compounded that 2G5 thing in such an insane way. Because if you would have had last year's examples that Ryan gave a second ago, so like where we say South Carolina, Alabama, Illinois, maybe were probably the ones left out. And then you'd have this happen. I don't even know if it would have been as controversial. It was just that you had like a legitimately deserving team and then one or two. Now, what do you guys think about that argument? That I get this a lot when I do like radio is, but yeah, but like the 65th or the 69th team in basketball, like we argue about their omission every year.
We don't really argue about it that much.
Right. I'm not a basketball person, so I don't push back a lot.
We do for about an hour on the selection day.
Yeah.
And then we move on to let's make a bracket. Let's talk about where the upsets are.
Right.
It's time for the first four. Like I agree that like no matter how big you make the bracket, you will have people will find a thing to argue over, but it won't linger in the same way.
So I'll briefly run down what happens with college basketball. The college basketball selection committee has this like long list of rules of what they are going to choose to accept it. And then there are hundreds of people who are like, I'm a bracketologist. I put together a bracket based on those rules. And every year the bracket drops and all of them are like, oh my God, they didn't use the fucking rules. they ignored these three categories that they said they were going to use every single time. And so people get mad about it in that way. Like, but you know, when a team gets excluded and dumped into the NIT, like normally people don't, it's less of a holy war and more like, hey, our RPI actually was pretty good. What's your deal?
Yeah.
But Roger, there's also never been a team like first team out, first four out, whatever, where you thought, oh, they could have actually made like the Elite Eight or the Final Four. Like that doesn't seem to happen.
No, when it does happen, it's like, wow, they went on a huge run, that 12 seed. Like what we
NC State, right?
Yeah.
A couple years ago. Yeah.
It's like it's one of the joys of the tournament rather than like a sign that the process is wrong and they didn't deserve to be an 11 seed.
Gotcha.
And this I think leads into the last complaint that you had.
Yeah. People see JMU and Tulane take the field, and I think sometimes the response is these are not serious national championship contenders. There is no world where they are going to, even if they win this game, they're not going to win the rest to even get to the national title, much less win it. And to that, I say, like, we gave up that ghost the second we went to 12 teams. Even in the 4-team playoff, we were sort of stretching credulity. But I think you could at least make a case for, yes, there are probably between 2 and 4 teams every year that can win the national championship. Sometimes there are 5. There are the occasional years where it's like, ooh, this is tough. And we did leave somebody out who, like, had a case here. But, like, for most of, I will say, this version of conferences, and I'm going to use that to go back to something Roger brought up. This is what it looks like. Like the cream is very thin at the top of this sport. Yeah. I don't think, and I've said this before, every time we did, college football is a sport, when it created the BCS or the Bowl Alliance, which predated it, when it went to the 4-team playoff, all of those moves, which were seen as like revolutionary and like a big change in both cases, they were entirely premised on, we want the national championship to be decided on the field. We don't want split national titles. We don't want national titles where, because of bowl arrangements, number 2 was playing number 8. And so it didn't, you know, they needed number 1 to lose in a game that they weren't even participating in. It was really about, like, and it was very clearly stated. It was like, the way football works right now, we feel like we need to build an opportunity to win a national championship in 60 minutes or more of football. Nobody ever said that about the 12-team playoff. Everybody was very clear with the 12 that this was about. The problem was not, gosh, the 4-team is constantly leaving out teams that we think deserve a chance and could win, whatever.
No, it was about money.
It's 100% about money.
Yeah,
if you don't want to call it money, you can call it entertainment.
That's so I had, a, I had a Saban assistant tell me one time that there's never, now this is pre-Portal, and or Portal maybe had just started, but it's definitely pre-NIL. He was like, there's never, in his career, he said he'd never seen more than five teams in a given season. And five, some years there's only three, or some years there's only two, that were legitimately composed and built at that national title caliber.
Yeah.
The problem is there's no way to construct a postseason where like some objective executive body is like, this year it's five.
Yep.
This year it might be seven. This year, you know what? It's only two.
Yep.
And you guys are going to play against each other. So there's always fat around the belly. Did you really think Clemson last year was going to hold serve through that bracket? You know, did you really think Tennessee could do that? So no, there's always going to be fat. Always, every single year, regardless of what logo it is and whether you recognize it or not.
We're arguing about multiple things here. And the playoff was expanded, like we said, not to ensure that all of the teams which have a chance get to participate, but to make more money. And then we switch the topic back to, well, these group of five teams aren't championship contenders. That's not why we did this. And It feels to me like the reasoning just flips back and forth depending on whether we're trying to include more teams for the power conferences or exclude the teams for the group of five conferences.
Also, real fast, this new thing that's popped up in the last 2 years where fans, or, you know, I call them like helmet nerds or helmet loyalists or whatever, they start citing television ratings, makes me want to walk into the ocean. What does that have to do with football? Like, that has become a new phenomenon. People are bragging about television ratings or castigating another fan base about television ratings. Ryan has heard me do this on other shows. The context and the subjectivity around positioning the television rating for one thing versus another is so wide. There's so many mitigating factors. It's an absolutely asinine thing to do. But yeah, to Roger's point, I just think at a certain point, we're going to drown in bad faith arguments.
And our, like, the argument from people on, I'd say, our five, the G5 side, is like, well, you have to put these teams in the playoff because for the aspect of fairness, of inclusion, like, you don't want to just knock out 60% of the teams in college football week one and say they have no chance. And I think what this conversation we've had today also highlights that our argument is different from some of the other arguments that people are making. We're saying that these teams deserve to be in for a reason besides competing for the national championship. We're saying that these teams deserve to be in for a reason besides making sure every single game is competitive. And I think that's fine. I think that argument for inclusion, for making sure that all the teams in the sport start the season with something to play for, that they're playing their conference championship games with something like really meaningful on the line, I think that is something that's valuable. That is something we have to hold on to. And I think I do value that over making sure all the first round games are competitive, or making sure that like the most deserving power conference teams have a national championship slot. And I think I'm just always going to feel that way. So like when Ryan runs down his list of the complaints, I don't necessarily have counters to all of them. And I guess I just have to acknowledge that we're yelling about different things and that you might be right about certain things.
Yeah.
And that I just have to stop trying to convince you at a certain
point. It's that, John.
I'm using you as a fill-in for, you're the one who put the arguments on the document.
Right. Damn it, Ryan.
Your
right.
arguments.
I'm the bad guy. It's fine.
It's a variation of that, like, John Mulaney joke about like Trump is a horse loose in a hospital, where it's like you can only expect chaos because college football is, there's never been a point where the structure of this thing wasn't silly in a core fundamental way. People with yellow blazers inviting you to an invitational bowl game and declaring four national champions in 1 year. That's just one example, right? There's silliness at the core of this thing, at the heart of this thing. And so what's funny to me, and I think Roger might agree, is like the same people who are so angry about JMU, I haven't really heard them say anything recently about like, hey guys, Stanford's in the fucking ACC. And we're all just staring at that like, yep, that's a thing.
Well, and that's, I think, part of what goes unacknowledged in thinking about how the BCS operated and how the 12-team playoff operates is that conference realignment has not just sort of, you know, we've talked about it's wrecked geography, it's taken away rivalries, you know, the Pac-12 itself has died and risen again in a zombified form, whatever. It has also made it, I think, a lot harder to understand what these teams are. Like, it was not hard in the, even the 14-team version of the SEC to say, no, the fourth team shouldn't get in. Whoever's ranked fourth, because you played most of the teams in the conference, you sort of like proved who you could and couldn't beat. You were a known entity. It is harder now because now we're talking about conferences that are so big and schedules that even when the SEC expands to nine, like you can see it in the Big Ten this year, you still have like, well, I only have so many data points, and you can get this weird thing where I think the SEC for years loved to sort of trumpet, it's a gauntlet, you know, every SEC game is, and whether or not you believe that, you could at least say that the conference was small enough that you were going to play enough of the conference that you couldn't really get a quote unquote easy schedule. You could maybe get a little easier than one team or the other, but now conferences are big enough that you can see meaningful differences in schedule difficulty, maybe not predictable ones, but you can sort of say like, oh, the way this fell, we dodged a lot of the top teams in the conference this year. We got away with it in a way that, like, we can't really do anything about. And I do think that combined with what Roger mentioned about a lot of the sort of G5 darlings of the past are now part of the power conferences, it feels like we have unmoored the whole thing. And I think, like, the most, probably my most conservative coded opinion is that we should go back to probably have like 10 awesome or 12 awesome college football conferences, and that should maybe each have 10 teams or so, and every conference champion should just get in. We should just do it that way. It would not be popular, but I think it would be fun.
Yeah, I'm not going to bog us down by like arguing hypothetical. Yeah, sure. Yeah, like, yeah. I've seen dumber systems that actually worked.
So that's
that were actually implemented.
That's a fix that's not going to happen. It is unrealistic, admittedly. Yeah. I do have a few fixes before we close out that I want to throw out here just for discussion purposes. Number one, I mentioned that if you always make the G5 team the 12 seed or the 14 seed or the 16 seed, they're always going to play one of the toughest teams in the bracket. Well, if we just said that we give higher seeds to conference champions, we would fix that to some extent. If theoretically this year you made Tulane the 5 seed and JMU the 6 seed and you bumped everyone else down the line accordingly, you would have had number 5 Tulane hosting number 12 Miami and number 6 JMU hosting number 11 Alabama. Is this... Yeah, go ahead.
It's a fair fight in that they're not going on the road to play the best possible team. But this is a situation where the arguments are clashing. Mm-hmm. And the reason that this has been set up is clashing with the logic of the arguments.
Yes.
When people say the problem with these G5 games is that they're participating in all these lopsided games, the people who are putting together the playoff don't want to fix that. It's right. Not their problem.
Right.
They're happy including that team to avoid the antitrust issues.
Yep.
And saying, oh, we let everybody in. They don't actually want that game to be close.
Right.
They would be much happier with the SEC and the Big 12, the Big 10 teams advancing out easily of that round after having dispatched. So when... Yes, the problem is not one that they are going to try to fix. That would be a potential fix, and it is not one that the people who have actually have the power to change it would want.
No. Yes.
They're not going to go down the path of trying to increase the competitiveness, because that's going to take them in places that are not financially smart
for them.
Advantageous. That was the word I was
looking for. The people putting it together do not have a vested interest in the competitiveness in it, because the people putting it together are teams and schools and conferences that would like the best things for themselves and nobody else.
Yes.
Guys, it's still the Bulls. The Bulls are still involved. Like, we still have baked in criteria and bias from the 1930s involved in this current bracket.
Yes.
Like where the best Big Ten team has to go to Pasadena and shit like that. Like,
but it's,
that's
it's
a, still in there.
But it's a little bit that, and it's a little bit the revenue distribution that you see in the basketball tournament, where it's like, it's not just that, oh, you know, it's better for the playoffs television ratings if Alabama advances rather than losing to JMU on the road. It's financially advantageous for the SEC. The more teams the SEC can get into the tournament and advance through the tournament, like, that's additional conference payouts the whole way.
Yes.
And I think it is important to acknowledge that. That brings me to my second potential fix. This is a relatively small one, and I think could be done. Right now, the way that works is that you get a set amount of money for every school that you put into the 12-team playoff. It's $4 million. You get more money the further they go. It changes a little bit. Like, I'm kind of simplifying the formula, but let's just say it's $4 million. The way that works right now is that that money goes to the conference that that school comes from. So Tulane made the college football playoff. $4 million goes to the American to split up. Now, the American can
decide. Some of it goes to Rice. Yes. Some of it goes to.
Yes. The American can decide how it gets split up. And in basketball, they are, the American itself is experimenting with an idea where you'll get more of the money that you get, more of the share that you get directly from your school's inclusion, but you won't get all of it. I would say let's do away with that. I would say let's cut the conferences out completely and just pay the schools directly. I understand that that's going to be good for Alabama, Ohio State, the teams that make it. But I would posit that $4 million going to Tulane, directly to Tulane, for like, this is what you did and you get this $4 million, is not only more useful to Tulane than it is to Ohio State. Like, I don't think $4 million is changing Ohio State's balance sheet one way or the other, and I do think it probably means a little bit more for Tulane. But I also don't think splitting it up amongst the American is doing that much either. I understand that we're talking about, this is revenue that goes into a pool and it covers all sports, and I'm not saying this is like a solution that solves everything, but I do think if we're talking about how can we reward G5 teams that are competitive and give them a chance to continue being competitive and continue to grow, I think if we just paid their playoff share directly to them and didn't make it go into the conference pot, I think that would probably be more useful.
Yeah, I would agree. Guess what?
Roger, you seem uncomfortable with it, though.
No, I do agree, because the issue here is we're trying to improve the top level of these conferences, so the games are competitive. That would achieve that for sure. Absolutely. In a way that giving a couple hundred thousand spread evenly, even to the Temple, does not really do as much.
Hey,
I wondered who was going to catch the stray there. Listen, when you're going to pull that example.
Temple was fine this year. Temple was fine this year. We don't need to rag on Temple.
They're not
as
bad.
Much as Casey we would Keeler. In other years.
I do feel bad.
It's okay. I forgive you.
It's fine.
On behalf of On
behalf of Lincoln Financial Fields.
And then my third suggestion. I think we should force scheduling arrangements that create more G5, P4 crossover in the regular season. Godfrey, to your point, talking about like the Utah team that beat A&M, Arizona, and UNC, and other teams that sort of had the opportunity to play like two power conference opponents. That's harder to do this year, these days, like especially as conferences continue to expand their internal schedules. I think we should see better movement from college football. And again, this requires like the power conferences to take the lead on it in some ways and sort of agree to it. But I think if you had, you know, more opportunities, let's use JMU as an example since they were the last team in. If JMU played Louisville and, let's say, Maryland. Maryland is not a sort of like, oh my God, blow your doors off team. You know, and nobody's excited about Maryland Terrapins football this year. I want to be very clear. But if you could, you would.
That was
you,
worse than my shot at Temple.
Yeah, but Maryland knows.
Nobody's excited about Maryland's
no, football. That's true. Maryland didn't lose their quarterback in the transfer portal.
Not a real state. Maryland doesn't exist. Not a place. Got it.
Crabs
take. If you had one more data point, even if it's just Maryland this year, I think that would be helpful because, A, if JMU loses that game, then it's a lot easier for us to say, like, yeah, a team that lost to Louisville and Maryland, even though they won their conference, like, I understand that I can't die on this hill. If they beat Maryland, and if they look good beating Maryland, I can say, like, okay, I understand, like, how to map them now. I understand that I can think of them as closer to Iowa or closer to Michigan or something like that. I'm maybe not bumping them up to, like, yep, they're Ohio State, they're Indiana. But I can get a better frame of reference for who they are. And I think it's just better for everybody if we have more of these in-season games and we allow sort of the P4 to... Sir, like both filter out the G5 teams that shouldn't be in the playoff, so to speak, and allow the G5 a spot to prove who their best teams are in some ways.
This is probably the most Pollyanna thing I saw in the show notes, which doesn't mean that it's not smart or incisive, but this is the one where it's like, I don't know. I feel like it was like, I have to play the role of like curmudgeonly foil or something. Like, this is the point where it's like, yeah, like the financial incentive against all this is probably the strongest of any of the suggestions.
Yeah.
Which means like, which makes it hard to entertain, even though it makes total sense and arguably would make for, I hate saying more better inventory for all of the different rights deals and networks and just like this is just better games probably would create better overall average game quality across all of the CFB TV inventory.
I mean, we keep coming into the issue of it just being zero sum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about trying to improve the quality of these games, trying to improve the quality of these teams. And eventually if you were to pitch these proposals to college football, the sport all gathered in one room, so many of the teams would be like, no, we don't want that because we don't want to give the best teams in that level the opportunity to be good. It almost, what we saw, I think, with people pushing back on these teams being exist is sort of a manifestation of like the G5 versus the power conferences really is sort of an us versus them thing. And it being better than those schools becomes a point of pride to the schools in the power conferences and an insult that you would even want them to be on the same level, think of them on the same level. And as long as there is the threat of losing those games, they will always push back and try to keep them down. And it's a problem that part of the sport just will never want to solve.
I think this is where this year is particularly telling, especially compared to last year. If you look at last year, you're like, okay, teams got left out, mostly SEC, sprinkle of Big Ten. Those are the haves, the biggest haves. Yes. Like, you are on the top of the mountain if you are in those conferences. And for you to complain about getting left out of the playoff feels farcical. Feels like you have every resource and opportunity. And if you couldn't win your games, if you couldn't like flip the one loss that put you in the playoff, we're not going to feel bad for you. I think this year, when we're talking about the ACC potentially getting left out, they didn't. BYU getting left out, and Notre Dame, who exists in like a weird in-between space where they are neither, they're not ACC, but they're not Big Ten. Like, they are what they are. I think there is something in the back of people's heads that sort of like, wait, 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 wait. I don't want to put the G5, I don't want to give the G5 something at the expense of further fragmenting the ACC or further fragmenting the Big 12. Like, college football is hanging on by a thread to some, in some senses, of I don't want to push this towards a super league. And if I think there is some latent anxiety that if we kowtow, as stupid as that sounds, to the G5, we are going to create pressure that says to Florida State and Clemson and North Carolina, well, fuck it. The ACC, like, there's no point in being in the ACC if we're gonna have to watch JMU go be in the playoff instead.
Yeah, I think I would agree wholeheartedly if there weren't so many other indicators that that's occurring anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
Because, like, Florida State and Clemson are, I mean, they are actively seeking to basically destroy or end, you know, the ACC as a football entity.
Notre Dame's in a war of words with the ACC.
Right. Going into 2034, this is probably happening anyway. So, although maybe they'll blame the G5 for it, right? Maybe when it all dies, they'll be like, damn it, it was that year that those two teams got in. And we had to do this.
I'm going to quickly talk about two other tournaments.
Okay.
One of them, which is more inclusive. I could have gone with the NCAA tournament, but I'm going to use the World Cup as an example. People in the countries with the best chance of winning the World Cup do not see the addition of more teams from other confederations as like a threat to them. When, you know, this whole college football playoff, like the selection process was happening around the same time as the World Cup draw. And when the last few teams from like North America were revealed, and it was like Curacao and it was Haiti. Actually, I think it was Aruba. No, it was Curacao. And like these countries that have never been before, these countries that probably will not win any games, people were like, it is good to see that happening. We are happy those confederations and those teams will be participating. It will be growing the game a little bit. That is a good thing. It is not a threat to us in that way. It's good to see soccer be a more global, more vibrant thing. That we don't get that vibe in college football. This complaint is a direct result of people not wanting it to grow in other conferences, not wanting more teams to be participating.
No, it's gatekeeping for sure. Yeah. It's the only sport. Hockey is the only other thing I've ever seen like it, Roger. If I meet a basketball fan and I told them like, hey, basketball's exploding in insert country here as far away from America as possible, I think a basketball fan would be at least intrigued by that. Mm. Hockey and college football are the only places where I see this. And it's a deep, bitter identity issue that probably needs another podcast and a lot more socioeconomic analysis to unpack.
Now I'm going to flip it and talk about a playoff that is a little, that involves, that embraces the exclusion, which would be our beloved FCS playoff, which these teams are happy to exist at a lower level and sort of be a part of Division One, but also it doesn't really serve as a threat. Montana State is going to probably win the FCS National Championship in a few days, and they lost to Oregon earlier this year, and that's just fine. It's fine. They're different things. They're not, they're again, not in direct contact to each other. There is still so much joy to be found in being the best team at the FCS level. And I bring it up to point out where we are with the G5 spot in the college football playoff is this sort of sick in between. It is neither fully inclusive where we are happy you are here, nor are we like celebrating the fact that you were the best team out of all of these conferences and you deserve to celebrate that. It's just this mean, constant desire to put down these teams for having the gumption to want to be included. And I hate it.
Yeah. It's when you put it that way too, when you think of the G5 spot or spots as you were the best of this very large group, it's really impressive. Cause you stop and you think like USF played great football this year. UNLV had some great like San Diego State. You can go down the list and you can come up with like, oh, there are a bunch of G5 teams, North Texas, you know, that were fun to watch, competitive, good stories. And to say like, yep, what we've sort of done here is say, like, you get to be their rep. In some ways, you are like their representative.
You're naming the champion of this group.
Yeah.
But like, this group does not want to be considered a grouping,
right,
which is why we have to call them the goddamn G5. Which is not even a term that's accurate and that nobody would apply to themselves.
Yeah.
So it would be like, I think maybe the solution is just to like really celebrate the fact that this team that gets included in the future is the champion of this group of football. They were the best team in this region. And as such, they have been afforded this spot. And whether they win or lose is not really the thing we're celebrating.
But it's ruining it, honestly, Roger. Like, the last thing I'll say is this. Like, I, you know, grew up a Georgia Southern fan, and there's all this memorabilia in my parents' house where it's like I can't remember how many national titles they had. It's X time national champions. And there was so much pride put into winning that tournament, the FCS tournament or the 1AA tournament, that it feels impossible to install that in this upper class, which, like, programs like Georgia Southern and App State are now part of, where you're feel like you're perpetually in transition. Nobody wants to be proud of what they fought to get to, and that just does not make sense.
I want to close on one thing that is, I think, it feels very Roger, and it's just, we happen to be recording this the day after the Atlanta Falcons beat the LA Rams on Monday Night Football. Really? Totally normal game, totally chill game. That sets up the possibility that if the Falcons beat the Saints and the Bucks beat the Panthers in the last week of the regular season, we will have a three-way tie in the NFC South of 8 and 9 teams, which by virtue of tiebreakers, the Carolina Panthers would win. And it's fine. It's stupid and silly, and every year there's some division in the NFL that we're just like, how does this garbage team get to be in the playoff?
Yeah.
How does this garbage division get to send somebody to the playoff? But you know what? It's still fine. It's still a lot of fun to watch. And I got to tell you, man, I think this is going to come out. I know this is going to come out after that result is decided. Nothing would make me happier than a three-way tie at 8 and 9. Deciding the NFC South and who gets a playoff game this year, who gets to host a playoff game this year.
Nobody remembers this, but one year the Seahawks won their division at 7 and 9, and nobody talks about that. And you want to know why? Because the next game they played, they beat the defending Super Bowl champions, and that was the Marshawn grabbing his nuts against the Saints game. Yeah.
In Seattle.
So why can't they host it?
Because they won the division.
Yeah. And it was loud as hell, and they had a bunch of false starts for New Orleans, and their offense was off kilter all day long. I watched every minute of that game, and that's what everybody remembers. Nobody remembers the Saints were 7 and 9.
All I want to see is some JMU running back leaping backwards into the end zone, holding his balls while they beat Alabama in Virginia. I think that's a fair request. Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber. Our theme song is also called Phantom Island from the album of the same name by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.